There's only so much time in the day, and most parents know that they need to work intently to make sure family time is well spent. And while families in Utah are well structured, the time they spend at home may not be. That problem, and the surprising effects of the pandemic on Utah home life, are among the startling revelations in a new Utah Foundation report. Senior analyst Christopher Collar joined me to discuss the findings in this edition of Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Peter Reichardt. Christopher, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So we've got this new report out called The Comforts of Home, Family Life in Utah. This is the fourth installment in our Utah Social Capital series. Previous reports have looked at civic engagement, social trust, and community life, and this one focuses on family life. Social capital, of course, refers to the bonds between neighbors and among networks, and they can use these bonds to benefit themselves and the group as a whole. With this series, seeking to be comprehensive and gathering data on roughly 30 metrics, and ultimately they'll be sorted into seven categories. Again, this is the fourth category, family life. Right off the bat is when you look at the structure of Utah families, they're quite strong. We start with a measure of currently married adults. And by a clear margin, we have the highest proportion of married adults in the nation. Why is that number important? I mean, I guess it says something about family formation.
So thinking about social capital in a family, if there's two parents in that family, that's potentially doubles the size of networks as just a single individual. So, I mean, there's more resources that can be brought to bear should the family fall in hard times, you know, that a second individual has their own extended family they're bringing into the relationship. There's additional network resources that they're bringing in that can add stability and kind of benefit a family unit.
And that issue kind of pervades some of these first findings of the report. Interesting to see too that when you look across these family structure numbers, such as this one, so we look at our proportion of currently married adults, we have the highest proportion of the nation. And then you go next door to Idaho or drive next door to Wyoming, and they're in the next two spots. So it's interesting that some of these regional trends start to emerge.
And not only that, Utah is far and away the best in these two measures, you know, looking at the share of adults 35 to 64 that are currently married and births to married women. Like there's a significant step down to the second state. And then another step down to the third state. So, I mean, Utah really stands out on these two measures.
So let's talk about that one, the proportion of births to married women compared to the nation at large. We have a far higher proportion, as you were getting at. It looks like in 2020, 81% of our births were to married women. The number was only 59% nationally. Here again, the second and third states are neighbors. In this case, it's Idaho and Colorado. But why is this metric important, the births to married women? I mean, you kind of alluded to it, that if you're born into a married family, then you've got those two networks legally built into the structure of your family.
Right. And so again, like if you have two parents, they each have their own, you know, social connections and you can, you know, all the children born into that family can leverage those, essentially a wider network. Growing up, you know, my first three jobs were all because of the relationships my parents had with other people. So really, you know, there's a lot of ways that families can benefit from having a wider network, and having two parents in that family can benefit the children.
The next metric is closely related. We look at the share of Utah children in single parent families. That's kind of the flip side of the coin. And for that number, it's far lower than the national average. Looks like in 2019, only 16% of Utah children lived in single parent families. That's the lowest in the nation. Compared to nationally, 27%. And here again, looking at the neighborhood, Wyoming and Idaho are among the very best in the nation on this metric. So again, that regional trend emerges as to family structure. But why, beyond social capital reasons, should we be worried about single parent families?
So I guess not only we've been talking about social capital, kind of like being able to leverage networks, but also just like monetary capital. If you have one income versus two income, that makes a big difference in families.
Right. So if you have two parents as a child, you're far less likely to live in poverty. And our research has shown in the past that the children of those families are also far more likely to do well in terms of educational attainment. And of course, you know, that then flows into other areas of social capital. If you higher educational attainment will tend to lead to higher levels of social capital. So a lot of these things, I guess people could say, well, you know, maybe we were sort of aware of that in varying degrees. Some people maybe more than others. People that don't watch these things very closely would be surprised by some of these findings to see just how strongly Utah performs on these family structure metrics. But we also see negative trends that had been afoot in Utah with regard to family activities. Now, we'll talk in a second too, as we go through here, that some of these negative trends in family activities were actually reversed pretty dramatically by the pandemic. But let's look at some of those trends first. Prior to the pandemic, Utah was in the bottom 10 states in reading to young children. And that's the tail end of a very rapid decline on that metric. Tell us why reading to young children matters so much.
So reading to young children, in some ways, it just kind of tries to count kind of the investment families are putting in their children. There's a lot of studies that show, you know, reading to children is a key way that they learn to read, which is one of the key ways we gain knowledge about the world. And so reading to children, and this is kind of looking at the age group from 0 to 5 every day, is definitely a metric that is widely kind of used as to kind of gauge the intellectual growth and more the intellectual support that parents are giving their children.
And it also kind of set the pace for the rest of their life, right? I mean, if they don't get to a certain level of reading attainment by, say, third grade, then, you know, they're playing catch up.
Right. And so, I mean, the common rule of thumb that's often, you know, referred to is children, you know, up to third grade are learning to read. But after third grade, you're reading in order to learn. So, I mean, if you're missing those reading skills, you're going to be missing out on a lot of additional learning that happens for the rest of your life.
Christopher, what do you make of this? I mean, it seems so anti-Utah. I mean, we have a fairly educated population, a very family-centered population, certainly if you look at the evidence from structure. How do we explain this? What was going on? Why were we having this rapid downward trend in reading to young children? Why were we in the bottom 10 states nationally on this one? Do you have any thoughts on this?
So it's not something we specifically looked at. Definitely there's a broader trend. I mean, this is kind of a nationwide issue that there's been a kind of a gradual decline. That decline's happened a little bit faster in Utah, you know, from 2011 to 2019 and 2020. But there's potential reasons that could be the case. If we have lots of children, parents to some degree have a fixed amount of time that they can spend with each of their children. So maybe having lots of children mean that specific children get a little bit less time from their parents.
What's really interesting about this then is you go from 2019 to 2020, obviously the pandemic hits. What happens to reading?
Utah had been above average for most years. It kind of hit an inflection point around 2017 where we fell below average from 2017 to 2019. But in 2020, we managed to pick that up again. I mean, we had the pandemic. People spend more time at home. There's less time going out and spending time elsewhere. Kids in many places are schooled at home. So there's definitely just a reorientation in society around the home, essentially. So Utah, you know, it fell below average in 2019. We barely came in above average in 2020. But it was a big difference that we picked up. And it was pretty common across a lot of states to see that jump in reading to children.
Well, what's interesting in Utah is that we go from the bottom 10 states nationally to actually above average. even as these other states are rising up in reading to children as a result of, you know, kind of being stuck at home together.
Yeah. One other possible consideration is that parents had more time to read to children since they were working to home, or more, less time commuting. I know that that's me personally, that saved a lot of time for me. My daily commute is vastly shortened. But maybe that allowed time, you know, for parents to read to their kids at home.
Yeah. And we did see in other reports, we did a couple of reports on telework, and we did find that Utah was among the states with the highest transition to telework.
Yeah.
So that may have boosted us a bit.
So the census was tracking people teleworking for a while, especially kind of during the early days in the pandemic. And the last data they had was from the summer of 2021. And Utah was among the top five states with parents who were working from home or working remotely, at least some of the time.
Now let's move on to another item. Again, here we see a surprising decline leading up to 2019 in families eating together daily. You would think that Utah, you know, we think of it as being such a family-centered state, and yet by 2019, the decline in families eating together in Utah had led the state down to the 11th worst in the nation on that metric. First of all, why is that metric even important?
So family meals are an opportunity for families to come together, kind of build those social networks within itself. And it's kind of an indicator of family health in some ways.
Interesting to see too, that family meals are associated with healthier diets, lower obesity rates. And of course we think of ourselves in Utah as being healthier than people in other states as well. But then you see other things like the children who regularly eat with their parents are more likely to perform well in school. And then, as you said, it's an opportunity to strengthen family relationships and address problems and communicate important information. Any thoughts on why family meals may have been in decline in Utah, and why we may have gotten so far down the list of states on that metric?
Again, it's not something we looked at specifically, but the more people you have in a family, and Utah does have, you know, larger families compared to other states, that the harder it is to coordinate schedules to get them all in one place for a meal.
Yeah, that's true.
One possibility.
Yeah, I often think about how sports oriented our kids are, and, you know, how much time they end up spending playing sports, just among other activities, really. And then how do you get everybody together for a meal when one kid is at ballet and the other kid is at basketball practice and the other kid is off doing some other activity? That occurs to me as a potential problem. And of course, sports have become a much bigger component of kids' lives in terms of the time that those that participate in them spend, as opposed to simply playing in the neighborhood.
We didn't really look at why, but it makes sense what you're saying. Yeah.
As with reading to young children, we see a change in 2020, another dramatic change. And not only do we improve on family meals, but we go above the national average. And indeed, we fly from 11th worst in the nation in 2019 to the top 10 nationally for family meals. And by the way, this is at a time when there's a national upsurge in family meals going on.
Almost every state increased in the share of children eating a meal with the family. And I mean, so it was a national increase in this metric, but then Utah just rose so much faster than almost every other state. Utah's jump was only second to Minnesota, which actually saw a 50% increase compared to Utah's 1/3 increase. But Utah did see the second highest, you know, rate of increase in the nation from 2019 to 2020.
Speculating again, and this isn't something that we looked at in the report, but speculating again, if it would be true that youth sports and activities maybe were getting in the way of some of those family meals, that maybe when that sort of thing was suspended or curtailed by the pandemic, then that allowed families to start convening again. And certainly factoring in as well the fact that we had that higher proportion of our workforce teleworking maybe allowed us to make up a lot of ground on that.
Right. It'll be really interesting to kind of see how these metrics going forward, if we kind of revert to 2019 numbers going forward as in 2021 and 2022, as new data come out, or if we'll be able to hang on to kind of the changes we were able to make in 2020.
Yeah, you sort of hope that through this experience, we realize that family meals are great, that we actually enjoy eating together, hopefully, and that we felt like that family reading time to small children was a positive thing that we want to continue with. Now, here's a related metric that we looked at. The news is less good on this one. So we look at recreational electronic device use. First of all, what do we mean by recreational electronic device use? What is that?
There's a survey that kind of looks at how much time children spend on either TV or electronic devices. In the past, you know, pre-2017, these surveys actually split them apart, but after 2018, they've combined them into just kind of a general look at children on electronic devices. This is when children are using electronic devices, not for school or for educational purposes, but to play video games, to watch whatever programming the children are interested in, or to, you know, just pass the time playing games on a phone, or, you know, when we get to older children, you know, browsing social media, checking out the internet and doing all the things that teenagers are interested in doing on their phones. That's kind of what this is trying to encapsulate here.
Why is it bad to spend a lot of time on these devices for kids?
Well, I guess in terms of the context that we're looking at here, we're looking at how this impacts social networks. So the more time the children are on their phones or on TVs or on their PlayStations, the less time they are building networks or interacting with other people. You know, you could argue, you know, social media, you know, that's all about social networks. And a lot of the data is still out, but there are, you know, this is a topic where social scientists interested in social capital are spending a lot of time researching. The kind of preliminary evidence indicates that, you know, you can still build social networks or social capital through social networking platforms like that, but it doesn't quite compare to joining a club where you're there interacting in person. Those bonds you form on social media are a little bit more tenuous than the bonds you make in personal and interpersonal face-to-face interaction with others.
It seems to make kids unhappy as well. I mean, you may be building social networks, but you may also be subject to constant comparisons with somebody's idealized social media image. And in fact, a lot of doctors, pediatricians are just telling parents, keep your kids off of the social media. Like the same way they would tell them to stop eating too much sugar,
right?
Or to keep them off social media entirely. That's some of the messaging out there as well, that it's maybe something that should be reserved for adults. So we've been going through really this kind of revolution over the past 10, 15 years in the way young people interact. Christopher, when you and I were growing up and we were interacting with friends or romantic interests, we had to use our words and our physical presence to get that done. Our voices, I should say, and our physical presence to get that done. The most distance you could create was with the telephone, right? And now there's just this kind of texting back and forth. We're in uncharted territory in terms of the way our young people form and maintain relationships. Which could be good and could be bad.
Slightly different areas, Peter, because I actually courted my wife primarily at first through electronic means. We spent a lot of time on Messenger, MSN Messenger, back in the day when that was a thing. But definitely going forward, it seems like, you know, you sometimes come across a room full of kids, and instead of interacting with each other, they're texting each other on their phones while in the same room.
And getting back to the point, the amount of time they spend watching TV and on electronic devices, that eats into the time that they could otherwise spend on in-person social activities, on sports, and on family interactions that expand their social capital. And, you know, looking at the research that's emerging, it's becoming clear that young people who spend more time on these electronic media, they have lower grades and they report lower levels of contentment. Here, as with some other metrics, we saw Utah trending in the wrong direction prior to the pandemic. Since 2011, recreational electronic device use among Utah youth was below average. So we were doing comparatively well, but the trend was certainly alarming.
Children using electronic devices really took off in 2011, and the trend line is definitely very concerning. And this is a nationwide thing. Across pretty much all the states, this is a metric where children are spending more and more of their time on electronic devices. So that trend continued, you know, once the pandemic hit from 2019 to 2020, you know, electronic media usage continued to increase. In fact, it increased in most places at a significantly faster rate. Utah was one of the places that kind of bucked that trend. We did increase our usage, but we didn't increase it near as fast as most of the other states. And so we kind of dropped from this middling, but on the lower end of usage down to
the bottom 10 nationally.
Yeah, seventh from the bottom. I mean, so we increased our usage, just everyone else tended to increase their usage a lot more.
We're still headed in the wrong direction. It's just that the rest of the nation is headed more in the wrong direction than we are.
That's right.
Well, that one kind of sobers us up a bit here. Getting back to the point you were making earlier, we've got a couple of trends that are in the right direction. We've got family structure that's strong, we can build from that. But then we've got this ongoing problem with the recreational technology use among young people. So what do we do with all this?
We actually wrote this report twice in some ways. We had an early draft working off the 2019 numbers, and you know, our main takeaway was Utah's great family formation metrics, but when we look at how, you know, parents spend their time with their children and how children are spending their time, we don't look quite so hot anymore. 2020 really kind of turned that around in a lot of ways. And so it seems like the big question is, you know, moving forward, do we kind of revert to our previous trend? Or are we able to keep a hold of some of the gains we've made in how we spend our time with our family?
It seems like in some sense, parents are going to have to be revolutionary in Utah. They're going to have to say no to the trends. They're going to have to be very conscious of the time they spend with their kids and the time that kids are spending on electronic devices.
So, you know, the pandemic 2020, that year itself, you know, it may be enough to be that shock to be the shock to the system to make things change a little bit, because it was such a, you know, such an impactful year in so many ways.
Well, thank you, Christopher. Very interesting.
Yeah, it was good chatting with you.
This has been Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Follow our work at utahfoundation.org.